to welcome everyone to Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Leanne and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Leanne.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will help keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening we are discussing step three. And if you'll help me welcome our panel, we have Larry and Bob. So we're going to start on step three, which is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. And we're going to start on page 60 in the big book if you want to follow along. So I'm going to read a paragraph and then they're going to share their experience, strength, and hope on the paragraph written. Being convinced we are at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God. Sorry, I went down to number two. Still on page 60. Our descriptions to the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we are alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he were sought.
Okay. Alcoholic, my name's Bob.
Hey, Bob.
I came in here in 1988, December 28th. I was 12-stepped into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was suicidal, living in a beach house up on New Point Comfort. I could not stop drinking. I'd lost just about everything, and I was 12-stepped over the phone by a high school drinking buddy of mine in Martins Ferry, Ohio, my hometown where I graduated school. Several people had tried to help me along the way and couldn't do it, mostly friends, none of which were recovered alcoholics. Butch Miller was, and I didn't realize it, that he'd been sober 7 years when he made a call right after Christmas Eve. And I don't know how many minutes we talked, but he 12-stepped me, and the next morning I drove 450 miles to Ohio. He shared his story with me, and that was the beginning for me of the fact that I had a disease that I was powerless over. The first time I read How It Works in the Big Book, page 58 through 60, and we got to the ABCs, I was raised in a church, but I never had a relationship with God. And I wasn't afraid of God, and I didn't mind going to church as a youth, but I never developed that relationship. And when I hit my bottom and Butch made that incredible call to me and brought me in, and I read this for the first time, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. That was me. There was no question. I didn't have any problem with the first step in this program. There probably no human power. And what that told me was this, that Butch had the answer and I needed God in my life, is what he was telling me. And I had little resistance. I know many, many people, and I've had plenty of sponsees over the years that struggled with this. I did not. I didn't have to. And fortunately for me, I'm grateful for that process. No human power could relieve me of my alcoholism, but Butch said, if you will do what I did with the sponsor when you get home, you'll never have to drink again and you'll never have to be alone again. That's exactly what he told me. And the third step, that God could and would if he were sought. And I want to tell you personally, I was relieved to hear that, because there was enough rebellion in me that if Larry had been there and he was identified as the president of Alcoholics Anonymous, I probably would not have stayed.
Oh, neither.
Now I understand over my experience over 28 years that a lot of people cannot deal with the God aspect. And the step that we're working on tonight and talking about tonight is the solution based on going through the steps, that I have to find a power source. And you know what? I didn't shy away from that, and I started to build my new relationship with my higher power. I was so grateful to read the ABC at the beginning of the fifth chapter, and I started to let go. I actually started early on to let go, and I'm grateful for that. I'm absolutely grateful for that. Not being fearful of God, but not knowing God. So as it reads, as we understand God, and I'm sitting here today 28 years later, and my understanding has gone from this to this, and it keeps moving, it keeps developing, it keeps growing, and as I learn, I trust my higher power more and more every year that I'm in this program. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Hey, everybody, my name is Larry. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Larry.
I want to thank you guys for allowing me to be here tonight to share my experience. Unlike Bob, I was not a churchgoer as a kid. Did not believe in God. In fact, I always jokingly say I was a belligerent, egotistical atheist. Not only did I consider myself an atheist, but I was pretty self-righteous about it. Didn't want to hear any God talk, didn't want to hear any religious talk, and really thought that this program was not going to work for me because of that. But I had a great sponsor in the beginning. My experience was I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wouldn't even say that what I did was a half measure. It was more like a third or a quarter measure. I attended a few meetings. That was about it. And I avoided conversing with anybody as much as possible. And the greatest expression I gave in meetings in that first 9 months was I would cry uncontrollably at points. And I'm not even real sure why I was crying. But I would stay sober almost 9 months by sheer will, my own will. And I would relapse, but that time, the last time I picked up a white chip was in November 21st, 1998, And I've been sober since then. And I still struggled with, I'd love to be able to tell you that I found the higher power thing right away, but I didn't. But I became willing at that point to get a sponsor and to listen a little bit. And the first thing was this great thing. God put the right person in my life. Somebody that did not want to argue with me, did not want to go toe-to-toe with me, and just said, you know what? Just do these things. I don't care what you think about God. I don't care about your atheism. I don't care about any of that. You can believe whatever you want. Doesn't matter. But when we got to this point, I remember being told that I would need to find a power greater than myself. And again, I would automatically think of God or think of all these religious ideas that I might have had growing up. And fortunately enough, my sponsor pulled the old AA trick with me and said, you know, you've got a room full of people here that have managed to stay sober a lot longer than you have. Wouldn't you say that they've tapped into a source of strength greater than you? Yeah, I can buy into that. Well, why not make AA your higher power? Why not turn your life and will over to the care of AA? And that I could do. That was the beginning for me. That was the first step to actually beginning to surrender to something greater than myself. So when I was introduced to these ideas, I was like Bob in the sense that I knew I could not manage my life. My life was an absolute mess. I was an absolute mess when I got here. And I was fairly young. I was 29 when I came in the door, and I was 30 when I got sober. And I remember thinking that the way they described it to me was, you've given everything you've had to living the best way you know how for the last 30 years, and look at where you're at. You're in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous. So it was easy for me to see that I didn't have the answers, and I needed an answer. And I didn't know if you all had it, but I was willing to give this a try because I had tried a whole lot before I got here. You know, as you hear it shared in meetings, AA was the last house on the block for me. Mm-hmm. I tried a lot of other things. It was also explained to me that the idea that no human power could relieve me of my alcoholism wasn't just about my own willpower, but it was about all the people in my life that had tried to help me up to this point. You know, my parents. I had good, loving parents who would try to coach me and love me and probably enabled me a whole lot and gave a lot of their personal power to my sobriety, but it wasn't enough. I had a wife at the time, same thing, did a lot of things to try to help me control my drinking, did a lot of things, put a lot of power and effort into my sobriety, yet I wasn't able to stay sober. So I begin to recognize this idea that not only not Larry, but no one else in my life was going to provide the power that I needed. And that was my problem. My dilemma was a lack of power. And I needed to find a power greater than myself that would solve that problem. So then begin the whole thing about God could and would if he were sought. And again, I start, you know, there comes that God word again. But again, I had a great sponsor in the beginning that said, you know what, Larry, just work the steps. Just take these actions. And I went through a period of time where I had to understand and define this higher power. And again, my sponsor would tell me, just work the steps. You know, maybe you don't understand God, but hopefully he understands you enough to help you and allow you to begin to recover from this disease. It was a slow process, though, for me going through this part. It was easy for me to admit the unmanageability, but it was hard for me to find something to turn my will over to. But over time, I got that educational variety of religious experience we talk about, our spiritual experience. It developed slowly over time. I don't think I ever had the Bill Wilson, you know, powerful experience. But the more that I would come to interact with you all, the more I would see this power in action, and I would begin to feel it in my own life. And I'm grateful to be here, and I think I'm going to pass after that.
Thank you. We're going to continue on page 60. Being convinced, we were at step 3, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are always, almost always, in collision with something or somebody. Even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may seem sometimes quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But, as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits.
You know, I was very fortunate. My first sponsor, Dougie. When I came back from Ohio, and Butch gave me a big book, he gave me the Men's Hazelton Meditation book because Reflections hadn't been distributed. It had been written, but it hadn't been distributed at that time. And he told me, he says, Bob, you need a home group. I was up there a week. He said, you need a home group and you need to go to a meeting every night and don't waste too much time getting a sponsor. And Dougie was, I picked Dougie, I was about 3 weeks into recovery and into the program of AA, and I picked Dougie. I'm going to a meeting every night. I'm going with newcomers. We're riding in the car together. Let me tell you what a great feeling it is to be sharing the journey from beginning with another person or group of people. It helped my spirits. I was in pretty bad shape when Butch got a hold of me, to say the least. I'd been drinking for over 27 years, and I had a lot of losses. But Dougie was the perfect sponsor for me. And we sat for hours, and I mean hours. I can remember from Saturday night's meeting going and sitting in my living room with Dougie, and he would share about what it was like for him. And I identified with almost everything that Dougie said. You know, I think back in like the forward to the third edition, the very last sentence, and it says, recovery begins when one alcoholic begins to share their story with another alcoholic. That's the beginning of recovery, and Dougie was the perfect sponsor for me. Because he didn't do this with one day or one evening together. We did this over a period of weeks. I can remember till 3 o'clock one morning sitting on my couch with Doug and talking and not wanting to stop. I wanted to hear what he had to say because I was in full identification with it. And I'm ever so grateful for that. The selfishness and the self-centeredness, and we know in this step is why we need a power source, because I've been here a few 24 hours and I can tell you that selfishness and self-centeredness will reoccur at times, even in long-term sobriety, and I can't explain why, and it really isn't important to try to explain it. There's a solution for that, and that's the only thing you really need to know. Two things about selfishness and self-centeredness. Do I have it? And what does the book say about it? And in doing that, I turn on a daily basis my will and life over to the care of God. And I, in reading the first three chapters of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I identified with most everything that I read in there. And you know what I've learned in AA, and this is by observation and just sitting in the rooms, is men or women, male or female, if you're an alcoholic, we're more alike than we're not. So I can go to a meeting and identify as much with a female speaker as I can with a male because of that factor. And I'm grateful for that. It levels the playing field. You know, the ego, at the time, people were starting to just fade away out of my life, people that cared about me, and I didn't realize. I knew I was drinking a lot. But what I didn't know is I was having that personality change. And they couldn't stand the demise, and they started to just sort of distance themselves from me. Not that they didn't care or love me. They just couldn't stand to see what was going on. My personality changes, you know, the characteristic, I'm either overly warm and generous with you, or I'm going to have a personality change, and you might back off from me just because of the anger part that comes out in me, and I had no control over that whatsoever. Egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. Let me tell you something. I was raised with values and principles by Sam and Inez Edwards. I'm an only child. I was raised in a church. I knew values and principles. And this isn't a good person, bad person disease, but I will tell you this. Those values and principles, in full-blown addiction, I could still talk values and principles. I just couldn't demonstrate them. And so lying became a part of my everyday. I got so that I couldn't identify a lie because it was commonplace with me with people. And there's a place in the book that said we lie even when the truth would serve us better. I did that over and over and over again. I tried to arrange my family to suit my needs. So when I wanted to go out and have time with me, I didn't think about my two daughters. I didn't consider my wife. I did what I wanted to do. And I rationalized and I justified. And that's another thing I found in recovery over the years. It's like a cork that pops back up. When I least expect it, I find myself rationalizing an action or a statement that really isn't rational. You know, and today I can catch myself, and I hang around AA because I'm still learning and growing. And people that love me and have known me for a long time, like this guy, sometimes will come up and punch me with their elbow, and they said, "Did you understand what you just said to that person?" You know, because I don't always catch it. But I take that inventory on a daily basis, and we are people who like things to stay the way we want them to be because control is the big issue here. And we had to control. The deeper I got into my alcoholism, the more control I had to have. And we're like chameleons, and I was a chameleon. I could be anything you wanted me to be at the moment, but look out, because once I hit the tipping point, you know, that personality can change in a mood swing 180 degrees awfully quickly. You know, this patient or generous, I may have thought I was patient and generous at times. I might even tell you that I'm patient and generous at times. But you know, if you were there and sober in front of me, and I've had this happen. Of course, I didn't understand it at the time, but I know now, having done an inventory, people would just shake their head. I mean, I thought they were agreeing with me. and the reality was, I mean, they were simply wondering where was my head at, what was happening, and alcohol was certainly taking over my life. All this stuff doesn't pop up in one time. I mean, the amazing thing about alcoholism is it is progressive. You know, if you're in here trying to decide whether you are or you're not, it's probably already progressing in you. And the thing is, it's subtle. And anything subtle, you don't even realize it's happening. Now, I can't ride that horse, but so long, at some point, I got to take responsibility for my actions, and then certainly that's why we're here. But that isn't an easy avenue to follow, and at times I became resistant to it. But one thing is clear for sure. These characteristics in this paragraph, that's me. I'm all over this page for sure. And I can still recognize it when it comes up today. And if I don't, Larry will tell me. That's all I got. Thanks.
That's scary.
It is.
It's funny. As we're going through this, I'm thinking about not only what did this look like when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was the great manipulator, and all of my actions and my thoughts and deeds were geared around me setting up the time and the resources necessary to drink like I wanted to drink and to be left alone and to, you know, everything, whether I was, at the time I had small children, whether I was rushing to get them off to wherever, whoever was going to watch them or clean the house real quick or, you know, whatever it was, every effort was made to arrange life in such a way that I could get drunk and stay drunk for a long period of time. I can remember thinking about setting up, you know, not only like the weekend, but like, you know, long stretches of time in which I could be left alone. And here I'm a father of three children. I'm married. The last year I didn't have a job, so that alleviated a lot of time for drinking. But, you know, I had a lot of responsibilities and commitments that, you know, normal folks try to spend a lot of energy and time on. But my effort was always to try to pass the buck on those things as quickly as possible so I could get to the business of drinking. It's funny, too, and I think about the first time I probably went through the book with a sponsor and we were reading through this thing. And I remember the only thing that caught my ear in the first time around through this was, if only people would do as I wish, the show would be great. And I thought, hell yeah. That's what I've been trying to tell them. Why aren't they listening? Yeah. And I had a great sponsor that said, let's back up here, Larry. And does actor who wants to run the whole show mean anything to you at all? Well, I'm not acting, man. I mean it. I'm ready. There's no acting going on here. I'm the real deal. And then it was explained to me that, you know, the actor has a role that he's been assigned. And the person running the show would be called the director. Oh. Okay. And then I would wonder about my sponsor's interpretation of that language. Because I was pretty smart when I got here. Let me tell you. So that's, you know, that's what it looked like when I got here. And I love the last section of that paragraph when it talks about, you know, on the first occasion, I might be kind, considerate, patient. I always considered myself a nice guy. Just a nice guy. As long as you were getting out of my way so I could drink. And I would continue to be a nice guy until it looked like you were not going to get out of my way and allow me to drink. And then I became a real SOB, you know, really mean, nasty, egotistical, selfish, dishonest, all that. I would distribute all those in an effort to, again, meet agenda number one, which was for me to have the adequate time and resources necessary to drink. So that's what that looked like when I got here. What does that look like today, though? I share this regularly now. You all never told me this, but somewhere along the way in recovery, I got the idea that once I'd been here a while and been through this book a few times and written a couple of inventories and sponsored a few people, that I'd have this stuff down. I got this now. Yeah, I know I'm supposed to just be the actor. I know. God's the director. I know that. You don't have to tell me that again. You've told me that before. But I find that I still, and I think Bob touched on it, can slide ever so imperceptibly, you know what I'm trying to say, without perception. I can slide right back into Larry managing the show. And what's amazing to me is the way that looks now is I'm very frustrated, on the verge of tears, and I'm calling my sponsor. Man, this is what's going on. You know, I'm now real quick to let it all out. It doesn't take long. But what's funny is that I still have to be reminded, why am I in this predicament? Because I've gotten back in the driver's seat again. You know, I've gotten, and sometimes that's all he's got to say. Sounds to me like maybe Larry's managing a little bit. And you know, before it was me orchestrating events to maximize my drinking time. Now it's, well, I'm just trying to get stuff done. I'm trying to help everybody. I'm trying to accomplish. You know, I've got an important job. Did I tell you I've got an important job? I've got a lot to get done at work. And then, you know, when I'm at home and I'm tired, and God bless my wife, who's one of us and actively involved in this program, and thank God is recovered, has a sponsor and all that stuff. And she's trying to relay some important information to me, and then out comes this line. I catch myself saying it now. Honey, you know I got a lot on me. Don't you see that? Don't you see I've got a lot on me at work? You know, this trite thing that you're bothering me with, I don't have time to think about that right now. So thank God I've still got you guys to keep me on the beam and to remind me when I stray off. Because I really did think that once I had made this decision that we're talking about and had done the prayer that we'll get to in a little bit, that I'd be there. Hey, I'm here. This is it. I'm done. It's a constant practice. It's one of the other great things that my current sponsor will always say to me. Larry, practice. We've got to practice these steps. Continue to practice these. Continue to take the small actions, the simple actions. Keep practicing. And progress, not perfection, right? Thank you.
Thanks. All right, over on page 61, what usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? Mm-hmm.
Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can risk satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Boy, that's the life of a practicing alcoholic who's well on their way. And that was me. When I'm half measured my job and I own my own business, when I worked half-heartedly, I would still whimper and complain about things. I never completed ever in alcoholism my own job description. The indignant part, the deeper I got into alcoholism, the more covering up I had to do. I spent most of my brain time maneuvering and manipulating my way to make it through to the time of the day when I'm going to start drinking and drinking hard. Now that takes some manipulating and moving when you're a salesman and you own the repping company and you're servicing an account like Best Products was for many years for me. People expect me to perform and be there when I'm supposed to be there, and now I'm not capable of doing that. I will assure you that I'm going to be there at 8 o'clock at your desk in your office to talk about our business. And the truth is, I may get there, but often it won't be at the time you're expecting me to be there. And I've always got rationalization. And I can become indignant so quickly. If you start looking at me wrong and accusing me slightly of something, I can take that very personally. And I can also, my anger can come out, as I said earlier, very, very quickly. When I think about the last 10 years of my drinking, that delusion that, and I would tighten up, you know, I could feel it start in the morning. I wanted to drink earlier in the day, and I know what it was. Life is starting to come in on me. And everything in my brain is about survival for me and for my drinking. And Larry just mentioned that. I tried my best to put on great appearances in positions when I was drunk as a skunk and most people knew it. And I tried every way possible to perform to my esteem and never reached that. And then I would rationalize and justify why I wasn't quite capable of. I wasn't feeling very good this morning, Larry, when I got up, and I'm sorry, but this, I could have done a better job, but here we go. And that became commonplace with me. And it's the only way I could make myself feel good. And the other thing about this risking happiness out of life, I didn't know what happiness really was at this point in my alcoholism. Happiness was so fleeting with me. It would be an idea or a thought. And even if I got to that point where I received what I thought would make me happy, it didn't take very long after I got it, if I got it, that it no longer, there wasn't any happiness anymore. And what they are for the alcoholic is what they were for me, is they're these little fixes to make me feel just a little bit better, because something inside of me is telling me, Bob, you're really screwing up. But I don't take any action or ask for any help. And probably one of the saddest things with alcoholism is, even if we reach the point where we know we've lost total control, we can't tell anybody about it. And the weird part is everybody around me that loves me knows. Yeah, and I can't talk about it. That's why it's so amazing when one alcoholic begins to share their story with another alcoholic. You know, something begins to happen. And risking satisfaction. Yeah, I tried that for years. I tried very hard. I would go from high to high to high. If it were Tuesday morning and I'm just getting off my weekend drunk, I start thinking about what's going to happen Friday night when I get down to the beach house, and I just live on that high until then. Now I'm going to get drunk every day, but the goal is to get to that next feel good. And getting down to the house and beach house and getting my boat out of the marina and going out on the water, which used to be for the purpose of fishing, until I realized I had plenty of beer on board the boat, but I must have forgot the bait before I left the dock. And I would invite people to go with me, and they say, Bob, where's the bait? You know? And I would make up some blame story that, yeah, it fell over the back of the boat. I mean, I would lie so quickly that it just, I've heard other speakers say it just like honey, it flowed right off of my lips. I didn't even think about lying. I didn't have to pre-think it. It just flowed out. I tried very hard to get the best out of you. And now I'm at the point where I want something from everyone around me. You may not see it or notice it to begin with, but I'm a taker. I have a purpose in mind, and I'm not going to tell you what it is, but I'm working you now. And sad to say, this is when our character, our real character, not the character that my parents raised me, the person they raised me to be, but the new character, the alcoholic character, takes over. And I'm doing everything I can to find that happiness, and it's fleeting, and it's all, and I can't make it happen much anymore. And this is why when you come into this fellowship, Larry said he cried for a while. I cried for the first whole year. I rarely tell my story 28 years later that you don't see me cry during the, at some point during my story. You know, this is an amazing journey. But all the years, you don't know how sick you are. Every year I pick up a chip. Every year that I pick up a chip, I say the same thing. My God, I was sicker than I thought I was. I say that every single year because it was the truth. I had no idea how sick I was when I walked into the room. This explains it to me. And through sponsorship and sharing with the sponsor, you know what? I didn't feel like the only one in the world. I knew I wasn't alone in this process. And I know that even my worst behaviors, I heard it from Dougie's mouth. I knew I wasn't. I'm not going to tell the chicken story, Larry Bell. I can tell you that the thinking of an alcoholic in the throes, the behavior is bizarre, and it certainly wasn't characteristic of the way I was raised, but it was the only way I could live at the time because I had to keep the secret from you. I had to keep the secret from everyone, and I wasn't doing a very good job of it. Alcohol is a subtle foe, and you don't even realize it's happening, and everyone around you realizes with your behavior, which is fully defined on these pages. Turning my will and life over to the care of God was a simple action of taking a fourth and a fifth step and taking that with a sponsor. And so how do I turn it over? I turn it over by taking to the best of my abilities and the guidance of a loving sponsor, a fellowship of people who want the next person next to them to make it, you know, that kind of support, that I take these actions and something begins to happen. And I begin to see what I couldn't see in my life before. It all becomes real, you know. And I watch other people that have taken the actions and I see their character. And I say to myself, I want to be like her. I want to be like him. You know, I want to be like John, my sponsor of 17 years. I'm with my sponsor today going into the 18th year because he still has something I want. I see it in him because he grows as I grow. I grow as he grows. We all grow together, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, as they say in the promises. But I have to have a power source or I'll never get through these steps. Not with this brain, I won't. You know, I have to tap into something, a God of my understanding, and that changes. That's what I was saying, you know, as I understand him, it keeps going further and further. It develops. Thanks.
Thanks, Bob. The line that sticks out, two lines, exert himself more, and the play does not suit him. And so what that looked like years ago when I got here as an active alcoholic, the play did not suit me if I didn't have enough time and adequate resources to drink. It could be any situation, anywhere, at any time. If I felt like I was not getting that time, that ability to drink like I wanted to, the play did not suit me. Regardless of what else was going on, regardless of weddings, funerals, births of children, you know, I recently became a father again a year and a half ago. And it's been an amazing experience because I remember the birth.
I remember taking him home. I remember the first night getting up with him and changing the diaper. And I don't remember that with my first three children because I drank through the whole thing. You know, I lost something there. But in recovery, God's given me the ability to experience it all over again. But exert myself more. And so what does that look like today? Okay, so I'll just give a quick synopsis of where I'm at. I'm coming down off of being nuts. I'm not going to say I'm sane right now, but I'm telling you, compared to what I was a week or two ago. So I had been working in a job that was pretty tough, pretty demanding in the field of transportation, supervising a lot of people, a lot of fast-paced, a lot of stuff going on, and got this opportunity. It was God's will, I'm telling you, this opportunity for a greater job with more responsibility and, of course, more money and a great title, you know. Had one of those words like manager at the end of it. And man, I'm telling you, I had the Bill Wilson I Have Arrived experience when I walked in the door the first day of the job. And, you know, everybody talked about how grateful they were for that I was there. Yes. What these people didn't realize is they were setting up a sick alcoholic to get really nuts. Because if you tell me I'm good, now I'm going to be the golden boy, you know. And so I started that job back in October, and the last 3 months have been Larry trying to be the golden boy. And the best way I can describe this job without going into detail is to say for most of you, you've probably seen the I Love Lucy episode where she's working in the chocolate factory and the chocolates are coming down the conveyor belt. You know, and she's packing a little faster, and then she starts stuffing some in her shirt. So I got that kind of job, and it's just humanly impossible to keep up with it all. And I've even had my supervisor tell me that several times. I think especially this past Friday when I couldn't even speak. They're asking me questions, and I'm just kind of grunting answers. They knew I was a little burned out. So it's like, you know, did I consciously decide, I'm going to start doing Larry's gig today? No, of course not. I was still getting up in the morning. I'm meditating. I'm praying. I have a morning ritual. I make the coffee. I find a section in the big book that speaks to me. I text it out to some of my sponsees. Hey, I read this morning. I do my meditation. I pray. I'm doing all that. And then I'm going into work. And between the meditation, when I say, amen, God, thank you, help me to do your will today, from that point to when I walk in the door of work, something happened. This transformation occurred. I turned into the golden boy, and I'm going to accomplish everything today. And these people are going to think I walk on, you know, that I'm made of gold and I've got the Midas touch. And let me just tell you, for an alcoholic, even though I haven't been anywhere near a drink or a drug in quite a long time, I'm getting real crazy. Real crazy. Because I'm trying to manage. I'm trying to control. I'm trying to prove to everybody how damn important I am. Just how, let me show you, you think I'm good? Let me show you how good I am. And you know, I wish I could say it was embarrassing to sit up here with a number of years of sobriety and to share that with you, but you know what? It's not the first time this has happened to me. And it's not the first time that I've sat in a room full of alcoholics and shared, guess what? I'm stepping back in the driver's seat again, and you know what? I've wrecked the bus, I've abused the passengers on the bus, you know. I'm using an analogy, a guy up our way shares, he talks about, you know, he says when he gets back in the driver's seat, he's a bus driver, and he drives the bus into bad neighborhoods, he abuses the passengers, and then ultimately he wrecks the bus and injures people. And you know, I don't think I've injured anybody at work, but if my wife were sitting in the room tonight, God bless her. God bless her. She's a great recovering alcoholic, and I thank God for her. She says little things too, and it's so funny. Honey, did you pray today? Yes, I prayed. Of course I prayed. Religiously.
You know, again, I'll just go back to this idea that I'm never going to get this perfectly, and that it's an ongoing process, and that I have to do. I got into a conversation with a couple other alcoholics the other day about maintaining, about living this thing. You know, we talk about maintenance steps, but I like my sponsor calls them the living steps, and because I think we need to bring them into our hearts and have them breathe through us, and we live this process and we do this thing, and God, I can be walking through all the motions. I can be going to meetings. I can call my sponsor. Hey, how you doing? Yeah, all right, great. I can say a prayer, and I can still be getting crazy. And I don't quite know how to completely prevent that, other than I need to begin to realize that I'm just going through the motions. I'm just doing it to make it look good. And I don't even consciously think that, but that's exactly what's mm-hmm. happening. If I can check off, yep, said my prayer, read my big book, called my sponsor, went to the meeting today, check, 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 and my life becomes that. Accomplished this at work, check, changed the baby, check, fed him dinner, check. And then at night I'm getting home and I'm getting in the bed and I can't sleep. I'm wired for sound because I've probably drank in 3 pots of coffee over the course of the day. I've checked off 1,000 things. I haven't experienced anything because I've been in my head the whole time thinking about my big checklist and how I got to manage this stuff. And let me tell you, it gets pretty crazy, and that's where I've been. And fortunately, my pain tolerance, my threshold for pain these days is nothing like what it used to be. So I quickly start backing off the pedal when I realize I'm steering the bus and start putting the brakes on. And I saw one of my sponsees today. He's going through a really tough time. His father's dying in the hospital. And I went to check on him. And he looked at me and he said, "How are you doing?" Because he knows. Because we're honest. We're honest and open with each other. And I said, "You know what, man? I'm all right today. Because whatever gets done is going to get done. And I'm just going to go in and give it my best effort. And meanwhile, I'm going to try to walk with God all through the day." And that makes all the difference. So maybe I can be a producer of a little more harmony, a little less confusion. I'll pass.
Okay. I'm going to read these last 3 paragraphs. On page 62, "So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arc through which we passed to freedom." And on page 63, "We were now at step 3. Many of us said to our Maker as we understood him, 'God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always.' We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him." And do y'all have anything real quick to say before we wrap up the meeting?
We got too long-winded.
This part here where it says God makes this possible, this is when reality of recovery really starts to sink in for me, and that I have to have a power greater than myself in my life. And by now I've been to a ton of meetings and I'm working with a sponsor and I'm listening to newer comers than me coming in the door. And what I begin to notice is there's a little bit of calmness for the first time in my mind, that all the rattling around is starting to settle a little bit. And I'm beginning to sense that I'm on the right path. I'm not sure what it's all going to lead to, but I see other people that have been down it, and I'm getting reassurance from people who've been around a while, and I'm sticking with these people. My sponsor said, don't hang with the negative thinkers. You'll reappear as you once were, and that's the truth. I've seen it happen in many people. This doesn't make my life perfectly. What it does is it gives me an avenue, a path, and a power source that I can stop at any time. Now, I couldn't do this early on in the beginning, but I do it now. I do most of my praying in the car, and because I'm in the car all the time, it seems. And I pray out loud because I can tell a lie in a heartbeat, and I'd tell it to God if I was doing it under my breath. But I do it deliberately out loud because of that, and I'd love to tell you the story of how I found out about that, but I'll save that for another time. I know that even if I worked these steps and didn't have a higher power, it would be like coming in here and you saying, well, you can either take these steps and have a happy life, or you can take this pill and just stop drinking. What I know today is I'd rather pick up a gun and blow my brains out than pick up the pill and put it in my mouth. I have a relationship with my higher power today, and I'm nowhere near where God wants me to be, but I know I'm on my path. And I don't know what God has in store, but I know this. If I do what you guys have done, I'll never have to take a drink again. And if I truly pay attention and keep an open mind, stay as honest as I can, and continue with my willingness, which is what this step is really all about, I will continue to grow. And through that growth, I'll continue to do something that I could never do before. It's called let go. When an alcoholic, before anything can happen, this fist is so tight, and it's like that in the middle of the night. My teeth are like this. I wake up and I'm clenching my teeth. My life's out of control. It's totally out of control. I don't sleep that way. I don't live that way anymore. And you know, I might tweak a few things in my life when I need to, but when I start tweaking, that's a high sign that I am trying to edge God over because I want this to go my way. You know, my go-to line that always pulls me out of the hole is, God's either everything or is nothing, Bob. What's your choice going to be now? Thanks.
Thanks, Bob. I got two things underlined on page 62 of my book, above everything, and then a little farther down the page, we had to have God's help. And I mean, that really does, that sums it up for me. And my sponsor shares this great thing at the bottom of 62, where it talks about the concept of God being the director. The concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. So it's like this idea that if I allow God to be in charge and that I play the role he assigns me, there's freedom in that. That's freeing. That's not confining. That's not, you know, when I got here, I thought if I turn my will over, it's going to be constricting. It's going to be confining. I have to be a good boy all the time, or whatever it was I thought, you know, which I don't think I've ever been a good boy, but I know. Bob's right. I have. But there's a lot of freedom to be found. And even when I started to realize just how nuts what I've been sharing about getting involved in work, the minute that I begin to realize that I'm back in Larry's thing, and I begin to start to really consciously turn this thing back over and ask for help. Above all, we had to have God's help. Ask for help. It's like things are being lifted, the weight's being lifted. It feels more free and it feels better. And I'm just so grateful for the fact that I'm surrounded by people today that can remind me when I do stray off the path. I never will be perfect. I never will be, I've got it. The minute that I think that, I'm in trouble. But the fact that I'm surrounded by all of you all, and in that, I'm surrounded by God in this program, and that keeps me coming back to the answer. I'm grateful. Thank you.
Thank you. Y'all help me thank Larry and Bob. Hey! Woo! Please feel free to come up and thank them or speak to them after the meeting. We really appreciate y'all being here tonight. We're going to pass the seventh tradition, baskets, which states every day a group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Not an alcoholic.
Got him.
This Friday, the 27th of January, the Oasis group, which I believe is 49 years old, is having a celebration. And they're going to have food, which starts at 6:30 and the speaker's at 8:30. They still haven't buttoned down the speaker, but anyway, I'm going to make a big thing of the Tello y Palo like I make here. So everybody's welcome. There will be plenty of food. Should be. The food starts at 6:00, and that's right behind St. Pius Catholic Church, right next to the Hardee's on Halperin and Little Creek Road. 6:30 food, 8:30 speaker, and the 27th, which is this Friday. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Tom. David?
Alcoholic David.
Hey!
Tomorrow night, we're all going to get hungry again by tomorrow night. The principal's group of Chesapeake's having their 8th anniversary celebration. It's 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Harvest Assembly Church on Kempsville Road. Food starts at 6:30. They got a speaker with, 144 years of sobriety? Yeah. Starting at 7:45. Main dish is provided. Bring a side dish if you wish. It's open to all. Flyers on the table tomorrow night. Jim W's group.
Awesome.
He's been awful good to us. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Nathan J. on the alcohol.
Hey, Nathan.
This is Friday night's candlelight group at the Lutheran Church on 1301 Colley Avenue will not be held due to their health and homeless effort. I don't remember the name of the program.
Yes.
That meeting will take place.
Yes.
Yes, due to the next program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Alcoholic named Bob. Saturday night, Fellowship of the Spirit, my home group in Gloucester, Virginia, Route 17. Lee Ann is speaking.
Oh, hey, all right.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Will home group members please raise your hand? Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days that would like to introduce themselves just so we can get to know you and welcome you? If you'd like to raise your hand, I'll call on you and just give us your first name. Okay. We've got literature over here for sale. If you'd like to purchase a book, just see me after the meeting. The flyers and pamphlets are free. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, just see me after the meeting. I'll be over here at the table. Smokers, please use the butt cam provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. And all of our meetings are recorded, and our upcoming events are also posted on our website, simpleactions.net. So if you want to listen to these guys again tonight or another night, you can go home and check out simpleactions.net. In closing, I'd like to thank our panel again for sharing. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which is going to be at Plaza del Sol. It's down on 22nd and Colonial Avenue. It's a little Mexican joint. Some of us go out to dinner afterwards, so if you'd like to join up down there, some of us will be down there. And we will close with the Lord's Prayer.
you very much.
Our Father,
our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Keep coming back to the Lord.